This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active-duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Pod Staff. With me today, I have Mr. Michael Stanford. Me and Michael have known each other for over a decade, I would say. Michael is a pitching coach for a college out in Galveston. So tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. First off, glad to be here. This is cool. I think it's been a long time coming for us to get together, but this is definitely a cool way to do it.
Good way to do it.
Yeah. Career, man. It's fresh. I'm 3 years into coaching, but I think going from being a player but staying in the same game, it made a pretty fairly easy transition. But yeah, trying to see where this can go, and being 3 years in, I think there's a lot more to come with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell us a little bit about your experience as a player as well.
Yeah. Started off Colleyville Heritage High School, but I mean, back to being a kid, it was playing at a young age and enjoying it. My dad played in college, so I was lucky enough to get some of his sports genes, which was fun. But after high school, went and played at Weatherford Junior College, and then transferred to play at UC Irvine out in California for a couple years. That was different, being halfway across the country.
And that's very prestigious, right?
It was a very, very highly perched academic school, you know, and that was different. Definitely going from California or Texas to California, you kind of get mixed up a little bit. But where I was, everybody was great. The school was phenomenal. Baseball was awesome. And it was just an overall pretty incredible experience being out there.
Would you go back to California?
I think I would, yeah. There's talks and hopes of maybe going back to Irvine and coaching at some point. I really want that to kind of be the end goal. But if it were just to be to move, I think I would have to probably be in a different profession just to move out there. But
yeah.
It's a great spot, honestly. Great people, great food.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to touch on just like the beginning of your coaching journey, that conversation that you had with one of your mentors as well that I won't steal your thunder, but kind of advised otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Ben Orloff's, the head coach at Irvine, and phenomenal dude, phenomenal human being, just always cares about his players. And I went up to him one day, it was my last year, I was a senior, and I said, hey, I kind of want to get into coaching. And he looked at me straight eyes and just goes, don't do it. Don't do it. And seeing him be so successful in his area and with baseball and all that, I kind of questioned why not. Mm-hmm. I love the sport. I love being around the people. I love the recruiting aspect, all that. And then finally, when the season was over, we had breakfast together, and he sat me down, and he was telling me, do it, but I wanted you to focus on playing your last year before you really thought about what the future looked like. But he told me to just kind of hit it head on and just do it. And
yeah.
don't have that imposter syndrome. I feel like we're going to talk about that a little bit too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just be yourself. And the best advice that he gave me was just truly be yourself. Don't try to be someone that you're not, and do it. Mm-hmm. And I took it and run with it. And I coached at Weatherford after I graduated for 2 years. And that kind of kickstarted me getting into loving this career and, you know, keeping it rolling.
Absolutely. So wasn't there a piece in there too where it was because part of his advising you not to maybe go into coaching was because of the new NIL stuff? Because that was, I guess, the year probably that NIL stuff started happening and players were getting paid.
Yeah.
And everyone was worried that the game is going to change. And I think it already has, honestly. But
yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Definitely. Man, it's different. You're 100% right. It's completely different. It's not just baseball, but it's all college athletics. And I remember writing papers in eighth grade about why college athletes should get paid and all that. Looking back on it now, it's changed so much where I feel like people don't necessarily have the drive to go play in college for the athleticism reasons and mm-hmm. fulfilling your dream to go play professional baseball. Now it's how much money can I get if I go somewhere? Or mm-hmm. if I hit the transfer portal, how much money are you going to offer me to go play for this school as opposed to where I am right now?
Yeah.
And that's all good and everything. I don't hate it. I don't dislike it. I think it's just a little bit of a different climb for guys to where they want to get to. And that was a big thing that he mentioned to me. It's going to be a completely different game, completely yeah. different world.
Yeah, and I feel like I can see it both ways because you have someone like Johnny Manziel who made Texas A&M billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And he didn't see a dime of it. And then he got in trouble because he went and made some money on the side, mm-hmm. right? But now he could have been, would have probably been the highest NIL paid college athlete.
Easily.
Yeah.
So Johnny Manziel, baby.
Yeah, I can see it both ways. The first way is kind of like, well, you know, you should want to just go to school and further your education, and you should not be worrying about money. But on the other hand, if you're making someone millions or billions of dollars, you might should get a little piece of it.
Sure. I feel like. Yeah. Everybody wins, right?
Yeah.
You get publicity with the school. You get more fans, especially if you get those high dollar players like Manziel in there. I don't know. It's fun to see. I had a bunch of players that I played with in college that made some pretty good money. Mm-hmm. I wasn't jealous. I didn't envy them by any means. I was kind of confused on how it worked. And yeah. there's still that muddy water area with how people go about it, how schools go about it, how players go about it. But I think it's not really ironed out how it should be completely yet.
Yeah.
But once they get to the bottom line of what it should look like and what players, I feel like there should be a cap for players too. Like there's no reason there's a 18-year-old kid making $4 million.
Because I mean, that kind of money, if you'd have to be a really solid dude for it not to affect you in some negative way.
Right.
Like you would have to be just like completely focused on what you were doing or focused on God or focused on something that, you know, would make you not lose some of your morals from yeah. being 18 out of high school, making $4 million. Like that's a lot of money.
We see it in professional sports all the time. Guys get a big signing bonus or they get their first big check and now they're kind of scrambling because they love that luxury lifestyle that they never got to have as a kid growing up or whatever it may be. And then next thing you look at your bank account and you don't have that $4 million anymore just because of whatever you're going through.
And you think it's always going to be there. And for most people, it's not.
Like, yeah.
I've even, you know, seen that in a lot of people's careers where you get into a spending spree and you think that the money is always just going to be there. So I think there's crazy stats on like just people in America. I think like 70%, something like that, live paycheck to paycheck, even if they make $1 million.
Yeah.
Right. So they have to keep making that and they're not really putting anything aside, which if that's true for most of America, it's definitely true for an NIL 18-year-old college athlete.
No doubt. I wish I could live paycheck to paycheck with $1 million bonus or signing bonus.
That'd be a nice life.
Pretty right? nice.
The last thing I want to touch on the NIL stuff is at first I thought the NIL stuff was mainly just for like brand deals and stuff. Like I saw like some of the UT players have a deal with Lamborghini.
Yeah.
And I thought that was sweet. But then I started hearing about coaches having a budget from the school to pay the athletes. So is there multiple ways to get those NIL deals?
For sure. Yeah. And you hit it right on the head with the branding stuff. That's how it kind of started off. But now the school's got, you know, NIL programs that they work with, or if they've got big donors, you know, big booster club, that's where all that kind of money is getting funneled through. But there's multiple ways to go about it. I had a small deal compared to half of these guys with a shoe company and like an energy drink company, and that's I thought I was the man.
Yeah.
And I look around, I'm like, God, these guys are
paid the bills though, right?
If for college, I was able to pay for my meals throughout the week, you know, little stuff like that. But I was never wanting that. You know, I just wanted to play. I wanted to play and finish out what I had started my whole life doing. And now I kind of get to see it on the other side of things. And I think it helped out that I was playing in college during the time that all kind of transpired with all the NIL stuff. Mm-hmm. So I can be a voice of reason for these younger guys that I'm coaching now in college to kind of help them guide their path through what they want and what they need to look for and what they're trying to achieve and it not just be all solely based around money.
Yeah, that's a good segue into what I wanted to talk about next, which is just kind of navigating becoming a head pitching coach at the age of 27. And I think whether, you know, you see it or not, your pure passion whenever you were playing and not worrying about the other stuff is probably what has helped you to move up so quickly. Because I don't think most 27-year-olds in sports are ahead anything, but you are. So talk to us about that and then how you're able to relate to some of those young guys.
Yeah, I've been thankful to have a massive support system behind me between family, my girlfriend, her parents, and also all the coaches and players that I was around too. I think having those connections, that is one of the biggest helping hands for a young coach to have. Mm-hmm. Being able to go meet anybody, anywhere, anytime, in any environment that might know someone that you know in that same business. So that was kind of my thing growing up, and just building relationships with everybody around me, because whether I wanted to stay in baseball or not, that's where I am now. So I kept really good friendships with all those people that were kind of mentors for me growing up. And I think one of the bigger things that helped me out so far coaching was I was able to go into the Cape Cod League in mm-hmm. Boston, Massachusetts this past summer, which is...
And that's a very... I'm not a baseball guy, so you kind of had to explain that to me. But from what I gathered, the Cape Cod League is like a very prestigious league that a lot of people would kill to either coach in or play in, too.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I was a kid. I wanted to go play summer ball, and that's the thing for colleges. You go play summer ball, you get shipped out, go play anywhere in the country mm-hmm. for the whole summer. And it's been around for 100 years, probably more. But that definitely, it showed me what it's like to be on a real big-time Division I coaching staff. Mm-hmm. I was able to have Jeff Pickler and Scott Pickler as my head coach and assistant coach up there, and they have been around the game for forever. And being in that area and being in Boston and being around the Red Sox, I was with the YD Red Sox up there, and that was just one of my favorite teams growing up. So instantly I just had a love for wanting to do it. And finally, I got a call. It asked me to be the pitching coach up there this summer, and I learned a lot. I was a little bit nervous going into it because I'm going to go coach guys that are making way more money than I do.
Yeah.
You know, in the NIL
and they're
aspect.
About your age.
Yeah. I mean,
in the grand scheme of things, at least.
Yeah. And I thought I didn't have the preparation that I needed right before I went up there. And then I realized it's the same game. It's the same game. It's the same people that I love being around. It's just at a little bit higher clip from what mm-hmm. I'm used to being in Division I junior college. Still, that's a big time league to play in as well. But being in that area around all those people that have just made their careers what they are now, it was very special, and I learned a lot. I was a sponge up there, man, just trying to do everything that I could to get better. And then I got a call this summer to take the pitching coach job at Galveston College and did it.
How quick was that yes?
Pretty quick,
yeah.
To be honest with you. It's close enough to home, and it's a great opportunity for me. Madison, my girlfriend, moved down there with me, so we're kind of kickstarting our life together down there. It's awesome.
Yeah, it sounds like... I want to get back to the coaching stuff, but just to touch on just that support system, you know, you kind of lit up whenever you had told me about that, whenever we were talking about doing this podcast, where you were like, you know, I just am so blessed to have a girl that supports me so much. And she said, wherever you go, she will follow. Right.
Yeah.
And y'all made it work. And you said now she's got something going for herself too. That's going to allow y'all to do that even further.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that was the biggest thing for me with her. This is a job where it's very unknown what your future is going to look like next year or 2 years from now or next month even. Mm-hmm. And when I heard her say, I'm in it for us, I will go wherever you go, because I think, you know, starting a life together is important on top of career and all that as well. But having that weight off of my shoulders with, I don't really know what we're going to be doing next year or 2 years from now, I might be in Florida or North Dakota, wherever, it doesn't matter. Having her be by my side the whole entire time has made this so much easier, knowing that I don't have to say, hey babe, we might be packing up and moving next year.
Yeah, you're tiptoeing around that conversation.
Yeah, it's normal. And we gotta have hard conversations in this life, and that's a big one.
Yeah.
Moving and raising children and living. It's awesome to have her around, because it's gonna make everything a little bit easier on my end.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I can definitely see how that support is probably unmatched. I mean, I have that kind of same support with my girlfriend, Allie. I mean, it's, you know, she moved across the country for me, right? And it was a pretty quick conversation. It was, we want to be together.
How can we do that? This is how we can do it. Okay, let's do it.
Perfect.
And it sounds exactly like that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's good to have a support system, especially when you're living with them and trying to start a family in the future. It means the world. And I really appreciate, especially Allie too. I appreciate just hearing that other people are on the same page and
yeah.
you know, willing to do whatever to make a relationship
yeah, work. And I feel like now it's like, I mean, we're all selfish to some degree. And I think, you know, sometimes being a little selfish in certain ways is okay. It's actually healthy because, you know, that's how you focus on your dreams and stuff. But I think there's a bigger trend now to where a lot of people are way more selfish, where it's all me, 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 me.
Mm-hmm.
And to find a diamond in the rough of a woman like that to say, I'll make this happen with you. You want to?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
100%. It's an automatic yes for me.
Yeah.
No doubt.
So I want to talk about just kind of like that young coach's advantage and how that ties in with, one, you being able to relate to them, but also kind of like that you have to be a hard ass myth in order to get your point across. Whereas, you know, we kind of talked about that the age gap is not there. So I'm sure that came with some imposter syndrome as well. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, everyone takes feedback differently. So if you can find a way where I'm working with 25 pitchers on this staff to make them trust me, make them believe in me, make them believe in the process, you know, everything that we're going to be doing on a daily basis together, we have to do it as a unit, right? Mm-hmm. So how do I build that from day one? And going in there this year, not knowing a single player on the team, I didn't recruit any of the guys at all. This was a last second spur of the moment. Hey, we need a pitching coach. Will you take it? I said yes, because I was just extremely excited about it. But right then I realized, oh man, I don't have any plan for these guys because I don't know any of them yet. And I had to really sit and think about what the best route of going about getting all those guys on my side would be. And I think that is just strictly building a relationship where these guys can trust me.
Mm-hmm.
Because those players have already been at that school with another pitching coach the year before me, and they've got their whole entire regiment that they had with this different guy.
Right.
And now I'm coming in and they're thinking, oh, he's a young guy. He might not know what he's talking about. That's fine. Let's test the waters all together because it's new for all of us. Why not try to go through it full steam ahead as a unit and not try to be friends with this guy, but I don't really like this guy's attitude or this kid's personality. I have to love, and I do love, every single player. And to that point, coaching, I'm not going to tell them, hey, you have to do this because I want you to be this.
Mm-hmm.
Mold yourself the way you're supposed to, the way you want to play. I played differently than you did. You played different than he does. So trying to mold all that together is tough, but that's kind of what makes a coach good, in my opinion, is developing them in their own way, because
as a collective unit.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. And that's, baseball can be very individualized, especially at the junior college level. Everyone's trying to get drafted or trying to go play at that D1 that mm-hmm. they want to transfer to. So yeah, there's a little bit of selfishness that's along with that. But ultimately, if you take the selfishness out of it, be selfless, and you just improve yourself daily, whatever that looks like, it's all going to come together. Because in the end of the day, I can't tell a kid to be that when he's not going to even try to be that himself.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be the tyrant. And back to like the hard ass idea of being a coach, there are days where you have to get on them a little bit differently,
mm-hmm.
but also there's days where you got to love on them a little bit differently too, because they could be going through something off the field that you don't know about, or you do know about, but no one else does on the team. So you have to play a little bit of a father figure aspect in that. And I love that about my coaches that I played for all the time, is that they try to be a friend and then a coach, because mm-hmm. that's where the trust and all that stuff is built up early.
Yeah, and I feel like I don't really remember having many coaches like that. Like it sounds refreshing looking back, especially, you know, growing up playing football. I feel like all of my coaches were that hard ass ripping you a new one because you
yeah.
ran a 4-7 instead of a 4-6, you know, something like that. It's
yeah.
like,
sorry, I forgot like, to turn the Jets on.
Yeah, sorry, man. I feel like that's a really good challenge too. Like, I feel like you have to mature very quickly in that aspect. If you and you kind of have to get over that imposter syndrome quick, or else it's going to be kind of a poisonous thing that people are going to recognize.
Yeah,
because I've had leaders in the past too, where, you know, I'm like, it's very clear that you have imposter syndrome. And it's not that they're wrong for having it. It's just once your team or whoever catches on to that too much, it's not that you fully lose respect. It's that you don't necessarily listen to everything they have to say now, because I don't know if they believe themselves.
100%.
So, even if they do, at that point, it's too late.
Oh, yeah. And the generation is so much different from whenever we were growing up and playing, too.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. It's true.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
I know.
Yeah.
But a couple years, it was, yes, sir, no, sir, I'm going to do it. Yes, you still have that a lot of the times. But I think a lot of the times now, kids think everything's just going to get handed to them. You kind of have to work your ass off, especially in this world now, to be able to be even seen, because you can get weeded out really quickly if you've got that kind of soft gene in you.
Yeah. No, and I feel like that's where, for us, like, each of us have a really strong dad figure, you know? And I think that just having that father figure mold you from a young age, I feel like maybe I have a leg up mentally, just because that was ingrained in me from a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think back to whenever he was talking about him being a kid, and he's like, man, I wish I'd bring the paddle back. It would really teach you kids something. You know, it's just something like
please
that.
No. But yeah, I might get fired if I whip that out on the baseball field, though. Just come here.
Yeah.
But it's true, though. Yeah, and to that point, like, coaching is not just baseball. It's not just sports. It's not just trying to get them to be the next best player. Like, I want them to be the next best great kid, great mm-hmm. father, great human being, great husband. You know, it all ties together, and it's life's not just about sports. Life's about learning how to be a good human overall, too.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me into another segue I wanted to get into, is just kind of conversation on mental health, because I feel like you probably are able to recognize mental health problems in some of these young men before they would call it mental health.
Sure.
And I think that's where I struggled with in my past, is I just didn't feel okay, and I didn't know what to call it. So if you don't know what to call it, and you think that if you called it something like mental health issues, then people would judge you, then you just don't say anything. And I feel like if you are building these relationships with these young men, they're more apt to share what they have going on in life and maybe some struggles that they're facing.
No doubt. Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it, man. That's why having those tough conversations are very important. I'm not going to try to dig anything out of somebody, but if I recognize something, hey man, you've been down. You've been really frustrated with yourself. You're not training like you have been, whatever it is. I'm totally okay with being a coach and being a friend as well. And I've got no issue with, hey, let's go grab coffee. Let's mm-hmm. go grab lunch today. Let's talk about something where it's just you and I and all that away from the team, where you can open up. Because I remember being a player around a bunch of guys that were all wild men, because that's how we were growing up, and especially in a team environment, you don't necessarily have that time, or you might not want to open up because it might be too gentle of you, whatever it is, man, that's
right.
Do it. You feel so much better if you just open up and talk. Just talk. It's okay. There's people to listen, regardless if you think they're going to.
Yeah.
And I'm sure along the way, if you talk to a bunch of people, you're going to have a lot of the same people in that circle that have the same issues going on with you.
We talked a little bit the other day about how, at least for me, and you agreed, like, we're starting to see a change in the way that men are talking to each other. Like, I remember, you know, whenever we were younger, we're just saying, like, sup, bro? Yo, want to hang? Cool. Screw you, bro. Like,
it's low
just,
level.
Just low level, surface level stuff. And now, especially for me, I've surrounded myself now with a group of friends that nothing about my friendships are surface level. Nothing. And I say, I love you, bro. I say, you know, I miss you, bro. Hope you're doing well. Say hey to your family for me. Like, just all the stuff that I feel like was uncool to say before. And this may be an unpopular opinion, I'm really not sure, but I'm really liking this trend, because there's a lot of negative trends going on in the world right now, but I have noticed that, you know, mental health for men has been a lot more prevalent.
100%. Yeah, there's a massive change in it. I think it's great. I think people are starting to get more active. I think people are starting to dive into the Bible more. I think everyone's kind of taken a turn from a couple of years ago where that wasn't really the MO, and we are starting to see men, especially our age, better themselves. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different ways that you can better yourself. It might be different from you than it is for me, but we're starting to trend on just positivity a little bit more in being there for each other. Mm-hmm. I know so many friends of mine that would just hold everything in for the longest time, and you could tell. Mm-hmm. And I have one very close friend of mine that I played with at Weatherford, who I still see all the time. He's going to be in my wedding. And it started off with he and I having a relationship where it was like that. And then one day in the dorms, we were both kind of looking at each other like, hey, what's going on? And then from then on, we've had nothing but great conversations about life and stuff that I've never told anybody besides him and all that. And now it's kind of branching out to our friend group too. You plant one seed, everything starts to spread a little bit, right? And it's great. I love seeing it. But yeah, it's not soft. It's not, you're not,
it's less of a man to do that.
Yeah. You're not less of a man for wanting to open up and just talk.
I think a lot of times women are more naturally able to mentally trust other women to, you know, talk about things that they're struggling with or whatever. Whereas I feel like men, it's most men are going to have that safe feeling with another man that no one really wants to talk about either.
Sure.
So a lot of times, like you said, you mentioned that, you know, now it's starting to spread to your friend group, right? So I think that's huge because it always takes at least one person to just be bold and say, you know what, I don't care about any judgment that could come my way. I'm going to ask this guy how he's doing. I'm going to tell him I love him. I'm going to show him some just really good friendship.
Yeah.
And it spreads like wildfire because deep down, all of us want love like that. Whether we know how to receive it or not, there's a part of all of us that wants to receive that love and experience it in full.
No doubt. And to that, the inverse of that is some people don't know how to receive it. They want it, but they kind of push it away when they get it because they don't know how to
compartmentalize.
Yeah, it's weird. It's not weird, but it's a weird feeling. And I've been the same way where I kind of push away any extra affection or love sometimes, but that's making me selfish because now I'm blocking off someone that really loves me and cares about me, and I'm kind of making that a stop in the road.
And that'll affect them too.
100%. Yeah. It affects everybody. But yeah, just do it. Just be open. If you think about someone, text them. Mm-hmm. If you miss somebody or if you think about a funny memory from 10 years ago, tell them about it because I'm sure they're going to love to hear it. And then next thing you know, you're talking about something else, and then you're getting together for dinner after you haven't seen them in forever, and then it's beautiful. It's cool.
We're doing a podcast.
Yeah, this, absolutely, yeah. I'm glad to be here for this, too, man. This is awesome. This is really, really fun.
Yeah. I guess that, I mean, that is, I feel like the death of that ego, tough guy standard, once that happens in a man's life, it's not that you can't revert back. Next, I kind of want to talk about just your personal struggles, you know, with mental health or some lessons that you've learned over time, kind of your path whenever you were younger.
I've always said this was the best thing that ever happened to me as a player was I got Tommy John my first year at Weatherford. So it was my freshman year. It was like my first spring start with them. I was fired up, looking for a first college season to go smoothly, whatever. You can't plan what you have in store for you, obviously. And it was tearing my elbow. It was a pretty devastating deal. I know you're going to be out for 18 months at the most, so I was going to miss a whole entire year. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me because I got to learn how to treat my body right. I got to learn the whole entire mental side of everything. Brian Kane's a big mental fitness coach around the country, around the world. He works with professional UFC fighters, professional baseball players, football, basketball, anything, you name it. So kind of diving into his ideas on everything helped me out because I had never gone through anything like that with sports, which was now kind of turning into my career. So the whole mental side was, it was kind of foreign to me until I had that injury, but it made me better. It made me stronger. It made me mentally fit. It made me realize that this isn't the end of the world because I got hurt and I'm 18 years old. Like, I've got plenty of time left to get stuff figured out, but it's the thought of I get to miss out on a year in college, my first year doing it with the people that I love that I've, you know, built relationships with for the past couple months, and we're going to go try to get after some guys this year.
Yeah.
So what? You don't have to beat yourself up for missing out on something that you're still going to be a part of.
Right.
How are you going to make yourself better during that time where you're in the dugout not doing anything? And that comes from learning the game, learning how to be next to the coach and understand what they see on all that. So I think that kind of helped me early on with the coaching side of things too, because I was with them all day long, every game, just learning, trying to be a sponge for that stuff.
Yeah, and I kind of experienced that as well with my ACL surgeries, because, you know, I had the one ACL surgery when I was pretty fast and pretty good at football.
Yes, you were.
And then I had that surgery, and then I fully got done with the rehab. I had switched to linebacker because I bulked up a little bit, and I was ready to have a great season. And then
you were
one wrong step. Yeah, I was beefy.
You were, but built.
Yeah, not a lot of fat, but yeah, pretty stout. Yeah, not like I am now.
You are, dude. You're looking good. You still stay in shape. It's big time.
But yeah, I think that sucked. You know, having it once sucked, but then having it back to back sucked. But like you said, it kind of taught me some different skills. And I think that's when I first, if I remember back correctly, that's when I first actually sat down to read a novel myself.
Nice.
Because I didn't have much else to do. I couldn't move hardly.
Yeah.
So sometimes you got to replace some things with other things that may not be as fun, but looking back, it was a great experience.
Sure. Sure. Some of the bad things that happen for a reason make you a better person, make you a better athlete, make you a better kid, whatever it is.
Like, yeah.
I heard this from another mental coach. You got to embrace the suck, right? You got to deal with what you got to go through right now. But if you're going to come out on the end of it, you've got to do something in between that's going to make you better. Mm-hmm. Or you just are sad and you feel bad for yourself and you're woe is me, whatever. Like, do something to elevate your brain, your body, your mind while you're in that kind of waiting period of trying to get back on the field. Yeah.
You heard it here first. Embrace the suck.
Yeah. Embrace that shit. I don't know if I can cuss on here. Yeah, you don't have to put on that.
I want to also talk about just, you know, aside from sports, your journey as a kid. You moved around a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
I met you freshman year of high school, and I didn't realize at that point in time that you had moved around so much until we recently talked.
Yeah.
And I just want to know what that journey was like mentally, because looking back, I think it would be really hard to have to move schools a couple of times and start fresh. And it would be really easy to kind of have that like chameleon effect where it's kind of just rooted in people pleasing. I know you mentioned that you struggled a little bit with that, but I want to hear it from you.
Yeah. Grew up in North Carolina. My parents were in the restaurant business. It was great. Loved it. That taught me at a young age to really be good around people, and watching my mom and dad work the way they did and, you know, create the relationships that they did kind of built me to who I am now. So full credit to them, to be honest with you, just because they put me in environments where you had to be around people. Mm-hmm. I think it's great. Moved a whole bunch from North Carolina to South Carolina, finally to Texas. Now I was living out in California for school. Now I'm back. I think growing up, moving that much as an only child too, it was tough. I remember sitting at our kitchen table in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and my mom and dad, they said, "Hey, we're going to move." And I was very upset because I had my whole entire childhood friends there. I was probably 12 at the time. And then from that move, it was just boom, 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 bouncing around all the time. But it made me appreciate trying to build relationships, because I could have taken it two ways. I could have been really upset and been super frustrated with my parents for what we were doing. But I kind of took it as an opportunity to, okay, I'm going to have friends from the East Coast to Texas, to wherever else.
You made the best of it, for
100%. Sure. Yeah, and you have to. There's no reason to be upset about something that's going to be, it's inevitable that we were going to move. So I could have been super frustrated about it, but I took it to a way of me realizing this is happening for a reason. Even at that young age, I decided not care. I didn't care. It was going to happen, so I did it. But yeah, building friendships and relationships was tough. But being an only child, you had to do it, you know, tenfold of what I would have needed to do if I had siblings, because I would have had them to rely on for a lot of stuff. But I think whenever we moved to Texas, this is whenever we've lived here as a family for the longest period of time in my in my life. And this is kind of home base now. And
yeah,
I've got the lady that I want to marry and will marry. You know, so I don't have any resentment towards anybody, but it was tough. Yeah, I had to mold a lot of different ways, a lot of different times, because I've had 20 different types of friend groups.
Right.
You know?
And you were good at it, too. I think what I saw, because we didn't see each other for a couple of years after high school, mm-hmm. or after college, actually. And when I saw you after college, there was a different presence about you to where a lot of that people-pleasing turned into, this is who I am.
Yeah.
So take me as I am or I'm good.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool change to see. And I wonder what the tipping point was for you to be like, you know what? Screw this. I am who I am. I'm still going to be super friendly and nice to everyone, but I'm not going to have to, you know, mold and change into different versions of myself just to be around different people.
Right. Yeah. And I wanted to fit in, right?
Right.
I wanted to be with this group and this group and this group at the same time. And I remember my father saying one thing to me whenever it was the holidays, you can't make everybody happy,
yeah.
right? And especially around the holidays, I was like, you got 5 different family members that you have to go to 5 different houses. That's what it kind of seemed like at that age where you just, mm-hmm. you can't please everybody. So do what you're going to do to make yourself happy and make yourself in the best situation or put yourself in the best situation to make you just successful. And I realized probably, I would say senior year of college, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. it took me that long.
Yeah.
But I think that was a perfect age. I had 6 years of college because of injuries and the COVID year and yeah. all that. So I was in college for 6 years. And I realized at that time, probably right around my senior year, yeah, that I was doing so much to try to make everybody else around me happy in terms of, you know, being the fun guy at the party or whatever, mm-hmm. or being the joking, you know, clown in the locker room with mm-hmm. all the guys, which that's who I am regardless. That side's never going to change.
Right.
But I realized once that I wasn't very happy doing that mm-hmm. as much as I loved everybody that was around me because they loved me too. Deep down, I was just trying to be someone that I wasn't all the time.
And I think it's your reasoning behind it. Like, you can be the fun guy at the party because that's who you are and that's great. But even if that's who you are, you can still go to the party and be the fun guy if you're having a bad day because you know that everyone expects you
yeah.
to be the life of the party. And that's a lot of pressure. I felt that pressure in my life, and I had to have a tipping point too where I said, you know, to hell with it. I am who I am. It creeps up sometimes, you know.
Sure.
Anxiety creeps up, I think, for a lot of us. And I think it needs to be talked about more. But yeah, I mean, I think it's about doing things for you.
No doubt.
And in turn, I feel like it's kind of odd because it sounds selfish. Do things for you. When you do things for you, you're the best version of yourself for everyone around you. And you don't have to feel that pressure because that's just naturally who you are now.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be someone you're not. I'll tell our players that all the time. If it's a big game, kind of just translating this into my career too, but if it's a big game or a big moment, why are you trying to do something that you have not done or you haven't been? You're trying to be a different person in a game or whatever. Whenever you're kind of just, you're stepping away from all the practice and preparation that you've put in to be who you are right now. Mm-hmm. Why are you going to change that when you're on the field?
Right.
If you slow everything down and don't try to just overthink and overdo and just be very relaxed and in the moment, like we were talking about being in the present moment, yeah. be where your feet are. Don't try to be 10 steps ahead of you because you can't control what's going to happen 5 minutes from now, but you can control right now. And that's the only thing you have to worry about, like this pitch, this at bat, whatever. 5 strikeouts to go, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, just having that mental strength and stability to realize that the past is the past, the future hasn't happened, I can't even touch that, but right now I'm going to be the best version and person that I can possibly be in this specific moment. Yeah. Everything slows down a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that goes into anxiety and depression too, because I've talked about it on one of my episodes, but where if you are too far into the past, that's the depression gap.
Mm-hmm.
And because then you're evaluating yourself for who you were, and you can't go back and change it, or what you did, and you can't go back and change it. So that creates depression. And then whenever you're too far in the future, that creates the anxiety gap. Someone told me one time, if you have 1 foot in yesterday and 1 foot in tomorrow, then you're just pissing on today.
True, yeah.
And I fully
That's
believe
awesome.
That.
That's great, yeah. And that goes for life, though, too. We're at a time where we've got changes happening, right? Thinking about marriage, thinking about kids, thinking about buying a house, whatever. That's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Life is inevitable. And of course, as long as you're alive, mm-hmm. you know, but I had this conversation with Maddie yesterday. We were talking about the future and how stressed we are with, you know, upcoming changes that we're having. If we're stressed about them now and they haven't even happened, you're selling yourself short of just doing what you have to do to be prepared.
Yeah, right? Take it as it comes.
Yeah. Don't overthink things.
Yeah, it's just, I wonder why it's so hard to do that. Because I've gotten better at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could even be a podcast. It's like, well, you know, I have two podcasts tomorrow. I have one. I hope I have the mental capacity to do this one. And then all this stuff, you can see how my brain just got jumbled right there.
Yeah.
Like, that is a lot of pressure that we put on ourselves when really, why not focus on our conversation right now?
Yep.
And I think, too, this podcast has been great for me because I can't really think of times when I'm more present than when I'm doing these podcasts 100%. And trying to get someone's story shared to the world to hear.
Yeah, yeah. There could be a camera here, but so what?
Yeah.
People are going to see it, but in the moment, I feel like I haven't had a conversation with someone else this in-depth where it's eye contact mm-hmm. and it's consistent conversation in a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very refreshing, too, just because I've had so many conversations with people where they don't even seem interested mm-hmm. and I'm wasting my time because I'm trying to get a point across that I think is important, but they don't really care about it. So it's picking your poison on who you want to share stuff with and who you want to communicate with. But if you can hold a conversation like this for a while, it's important. It's impressive. I think that's kind of a lost art, is just overall communication with people. Mm-hmm. And that's something I look for in players when I'm recruiting them, is how do you shake my hand? How do you communicate with me? Are you a family guy? Whatever it is, I want to get to know you, but I can't do that if I can't have a conversation face-to-face where you're looking away every 5 seconds or you're looking down. Like, we're right here. Mm-hmm. You can talk. I'm not going to hurt you if I'm looking into your soul. I just want to know about you.
Yeah, and I think that goes into, on the other hand, kind of the art of reconnecting. You had mentioned something to me about you, when you drive somewhere or you, anytime you're doing something and you think about someone from your past that you haven't seen in a while that you care about, mm-hmm. You just shoot them a text or you give them a call right then and there.
Try to, yeah.
And yeah, I think I think a lot of us should do that more. And when we do, it should be received better because, you know, I think there are times when people love that stuff. And there are times when you almost kind of feel shot down. It's not received well. It's like, hey, bro, miss you. It's been a while. Hope all is well. And it's just like, thanks, man. You too. And you're kind of like,
I tried.
Yeah, I tried. But and then I think that's all that matters is trying. Like, if you're making the effort, then your side of the street is clean. And like we talked about, even for our friendship, like our friendship in the last 6 years has been maybe a 2 to 3 time a year see each other or reach out.
Yeah.
And every single time, I'm reminded that it doesn't, the amount of time that you spend with someone does not dictate how good of a friend they are.
100%. Yeah. I don't have to be with you every single day to know that we've got a really good friendship and a good bond.
Yeah.
But the fact that we stay connected and keep reaching out and all this, mm-hmm. now we're here doing this together, it's awesome. Yeah. There's no reason to not reach out to people. Because I think about my grandparents quite a bit. They're not here anymore, but I think about when I was younger, why didn't I call more? Mm-hmm. Why didn't I text more? Because now it's just reminiscing on all the good times and not looking forward to the next time I get to see them, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have put a little bit more effort in. And that goes for friends and family and everything else too. There's no reason why you shouldn't reach out, because in the end of the day, you're doing your part. And if it's reciprocated or not, regardless, mm-hmm. you feel good about just making an effort to try to make someone's day a little bit better.
Yeah, keeping that side of the street clean. I think that's a really good reminder. I think that's a good way to start to close out. I do want to see if you have any, you know, last piece of advice or last little nuggets that you can share with our listeners, maybe for someone who is in that transitional phase or has been bouncing around and being around different people and maybe they're struggling mentally. Like, what would you say to those people?
Just be yourself. Everyone's different. Don't try to be someone you're not, and trust in what you do. Trust in yourself and trust in your support system and use your support system. But overall, just be a good person, man. Mm-hmm. Be a good person, and you see massive changes in people that just try to genuinely do good on a daily basis. And I think the future is bright for a lot of people that just care about human beings. And it doesn't have to just be people in your corner. Like, mm-hmm. be good to everybody. Yeah, there's a lot of people that aren't good, but you can be good to them and you might change them and fix them or whatever it is. Just be a good person to people and mm-hmm. care and love and spread the joy as much as you possibly can.
Absolutely.
Honestly, yeah.
Well, I think that's a great way to close it out. Michael Stanford, everyone.
Thanks, man. Awesome.
Thanks, brother.
Good to meet good you.
It's crazy.
This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active-duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right. A company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com.